हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा वीर्यविषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 10. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, situated in human form, engaging in bhakti yoga, they directly search for me, Krishna, by causes of bhakti such as hearing and chanting. It is said, bhaktyaham ekaya grahya. I am only attained by bhakti. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.4.21. One may ask, can they see you by searching for you through inference, since you are the stimulator of intelligence? To which the Lord responds, I cannot be attained by inference using the intelligence and various indicators. The dependent jiva is inferred by inference, since there must be a cause of the senses and intelligence. And the antayami, who instigates the jiva, is somewhat inferred by inference. However, Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, cannot be so inferred, since his form, qualities, pastimes, and powers are inconceivable beyond concept of the intelligence. Footnote 6. The eye does not go there, nor does speech go there, nor the mind. We know it not. We do not understand how anyone might teach us about it. It is different from the known, and even more different from the unknown. Thus we have heard from teachers in the ancient tradition who explained this to us. Kena Upanishad 1:3-4. Right? Yeah, so this is like right in the beginning. So that's the whole point, is that you can infer that there's Paramatma. Like that. But you can't infer beyond. Bhagavan cannot be inferred. So that's only by devotion can you know Bhagavan. And only when you have devotion, know Bhagavan, can you actually understand things as they are. Because if you don't understand Bhagavan or accept that there is, and you simply have some idea of Brahman or Paramatma, you still won't understand why things work. That's why we end up with all these different philosophies. Right? The bogus philosophies means that they're not actually understanding Bhagavan. It's not about Bhagavan, it's about us. Right? So it's just how far you can take philosophy means your first option will be how far you can take the philosophy without any concept of God and try to explain creation and everything else and, you know, whatever's happening in the world. When that, you know, because then we're fully the controllers and enjoyers. When we see that that's not working, we may accept to some degree the aspect of that there's a supreme. Though he's not really involved in what we're doing, we're the ones that are doing everything. Then you can accept that's there, but only up to Brahman and Paramatma, because Brahman simply means the existence of the things that are here. And then you have the Paramatma as the controller. He sanctions, he has that control. But you still won't actually understand them, because you have to remember, those aspects are dependent on Bhagavan. So, why Brahman or why Paramatma will be involved in this, you can't say. But most people aren't worried, because they're not worried about what anybody else feels or thinks, it's what they feel. So as long as it works for me, it's good. Right? Me means me, my family, whoever's important to me. But the point is, as long as my field of activities works, the philosophy's good. But that doesn't explain why your field of activities isn't working so good. Right? So all we think is, okay, it's a problem, let's get out of this problem. But we do that in the level of karma. So gyan, where you're trying for liberation, is just a reaction to karma. Like, night is just a lack of day. Right? Bad is just a lack of good. So in the same way, lack of enjoyment from karma, then the reaction to that is no karma, no nothing. Right? You get angry, you just want to get rid of everything. Right? The only problem is that we can't guarantee in Brahman that there'll be this nice, big, huge, double, fluffy bed with plenty of pillows on it that you can go bury your head in and scream. Like that. Somehow or another, liberation isn't defined that way. Right? So you may not find as much satisfaction in it as they're professing that there would be. Right? Yes. Because you wouldn't have a head anyway to bury in the pillows, because there aren't any pillows. Yeah. Does this make sense? So all inappropriate philosophies all come from this. They're Atma-centric instead of Bhagavan-centric. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So anything that there is that can come up as a philosophy, if it's wrong, it's because of this. Right? Even you're talking about Krishna. Like we say, the Sahajiyas, they're talking about Krishna. But is it about Krishna? It's about how they'll feel being part of the pastimes. How what they're going to do in these pastimes. You know, how they're going to be doing something better than what you're doing in the pastimes. And how they're so much better of a devotee than you are in these pastimes. Where does Bhagavan come into this? He just happens to be the medium you're using to, be self-centered. You know, does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, a celebrity is going to a big event. The big event is just to bring attention to themselves. You understand? So that's all. The bigger the event, the bigger the person you are. You know? Does that make sense? Right? You know, if you go to the...
Come on.
You go to, like, how do you say? Cairns?
Cairns.
Yeah. Yeah. You go there, then that means you're big. You know? And you're in, whatever it is, the Tallahassee Film Critics Award, then may not be as prestigious. Yeah?
It's going to pass my Tatan devotee, we are going to Cannes.
They are going.
No, we are going to Cannes. To check the people to write some books.
Yeah, yeah. Because then at least you got.
That's how we become famous.
Yes, yes. Did you meet those guys out there? Yeah. See, we're famous. Yeah. At least they're talking, right? Does that make sense? So it's a very important point. Bhagavan, you cannot in any way, shape, or form understand without devotion. A little bit of. You can infer about Brahman and Paramatma, the greatness, the unlimitedness, the lack of material qualities, that much you can get. And for them, that's enough. Right? You know, it's enough to, you know, be able to lay blame. You know, he's in charge, not me. Right? Okay. Krishna continued, in this regard, sages cite a historical narration concerning the conversation between the greatly powerful king Yadu and an Avadhuta, verses 25 to 51, the elemental gurus. Right? So here we're not talking about the little elementals that run around out in the forest and all that. And yeah, like that. This is not a new agey explanation here.
It's not knowledge connected with the element. It's like atom.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not connected with that one either. Yeah, this is the gross manifestation, the big atom, right? You know. Yeah. Sri Krishna continued. Maharaj Yadu once... No one knows what we're talking about. That was a Vedanta Sutra joke on Vaisheshika philosophy. Yeah. So it means we're starting to understand something. Now we can goof on it, right? Yes. Before that, I couldn't even relate to it. Because Vaisheshika, his philosophy is all about atoms. Then you put two atoms together, those two get together, you know, six atoms, and then from there everything gets, and then this is the big manifestation that we're sitting on here, Earth. But it all started with two atoms. Right? Yeah. Sri Krishna continued, Maharaja Yati once observed a certain Brahmin, Avadhuta, who appeared to be quite young and learned, wandering about fearlessly. Being himself most learned in spiritual science, the king took the opportunity and inquired from him as follows. Right? So, because he's learned, he could appreciate the position of the Avadhuta. Otherwise, if he wouldn't learn it, he'd just think, who's this beggar? Right? But otherwise, how many beggars look young and youthful and full of energy and you know, just peaceful and transcendent? Yeah, they don't have it. Right? Sri Yadu said, O Brahmana, I see that you are not engaged in any practical religious activity, and yet have acquired a most expert understanding of all things and all people within this world. Right? You can tell by the symptoms. Kindly tell me, sir, how did you acquire this extraordinary intelligence? And why are you traveling freely throughout the world, behaving as if you were a child? Right? Because the child doesn't stay any place too long. You know, how much is, you know, interesting or that? That's all the longer they stay. You know, it's like child comes, sits on your lap, then you think, oh, we'll sit here for so long. And they'll be here for, you know, a few seconds, and then they're off again, running off. Or whatever they're doing, they're always moving. So that's the whole point, is that there's a constant movement. Like that. There's no, because there's no attachment to anything specific. So that's what it mentions, the Shastra mentions, that the sannyasi is like a restless child. They don't just keep moving. Like that. That's the whole point. Generally, human beings work hard to cultivate religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and also knowledge of the soul. And their usual motive is to increase the duration of their lives, acquire fame, and enjoy material opulence. Right? Because even you look at it, why merge into Brahman? What are you going to get from it? Right? Eternity, unlimitedness, and ananda. Right? And if you're on the material platform, you go to the heavenly planets, that increases your life, increases your fame, and it increases your material opulence. You understand? So that's the motive in the material world. It's always going to go back to these. Right? You, however, although capable, learned, expert, handsome, and most eloquent, are not engaged in doing anything, nor do you desire anything. Rather, you appear stupefied and maddened as if you were a ghostly creature. That's how gentle people would see. Although all people within the material world are burning in the great forest fire of lust and greed, you remain free and are not burned by that fire. You are just like an elephant who takes shelter from a forest fire by standing within the water of the Ganges River. Right? Because they can go inside and go completely underwater. Right? Because they have their trunk. They have a natural snorkel. Have any of you ever seen them bathe the elephants? They have enough water, the elephant's basically covered. Maybe a little bit of its side will stick out because they lie down. And then you'll just see this little bump there, you know. And then now and again you'll see their trunk come up. They'll blow the air out, take a breath, and then the trunk will go back in. So they can stand actually fully under the water and just, you know, however much point. And then when they need, they just put their trunk up, breathe, and then down again. So they can actually, you know, survive from a forest fire. Like that. So like that, then he's saying that the elephant, right, because the elephant's considered something great, then takes shelter of the Ganges. In other words, you take shelter of absorbing yourself in the lotus feet of the Lord, because the Ganges represents the Lord's lotus feet. So you take shelter there, immerse yourself in the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord, then you're sheltered from the fire of material existence. O Brahmana, we see that you are devoid of any contact with material enjoyment, and that you are traveling alone without any companions or family members. Right? So there's no need of social and all these things. Therefore, because we are sincerely inquiring from you, please tell us the cause of the great ecstasy that you are feeling within yourself. Right? What's causing that? Means what process are you following? What knowledge are you contemplating? What practice are you... You do, because otherwise it's not obvious. There's no practical religious activity. So of the 20 religious activities that are mentioned in the scriptures, you don't see him performing any of them. He's just kind of moving around. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, Where does your bliss come from? He asked, because hearing directly from a person is the best way to get the truth. Right? Because otherwise, if you only hear on Facebook, you know, about somebody else, then it may not be actually the full truth. I mean, I don't want to start any, debates here or any, you know, disturb anyone's mind or anything. But so in other words, hearing directly, right? You are devoid of material enjoyment and live alone. So otherwise, you're not going to otherwise know unless they reveal. There's not someone else you can talk to even. Right? Does that make sense?
Only the Paramatma. Only the Paramatma.
Yes. Well, he's talking to Paramatma, but you know, whether you, if you can ask, if you can already talk to Paramatma and ask him, hey, what's with this guy? Then yeah. But they'll still go and talk to him, because then here's someone else on a transcendental platform. Lord Krishna continued. The intelligent King Yadu, always respectful to the Brahmanas, waited with bowed head as the Brahmana, pleased with the king's attitude, began to reply. Right? So it's attitude that's the most important thing. So it's not that he asked the question. It's not because he asked, you deserve an answer. This modern thing is not, no, I want to know, I deserve an answer. No, you don't. You have the right attitude, then we can talk about discussion. But just because there's an attitude, so then you say, because I have attitude, therefore I'm the center of everything, it goes the way I want. Means you could say, yes, this is a very valid and solid position that is well known and appreciated in this world, that it's all about you, you're self-centered, you don't care about anyone else really, it's just whatever you feel like and all that, and that is actually an authority for everybody else taking care of you. And we do find this. There's billions of examples of this. They're called babies. Right? But it's expected as they grow up that they'll stop doing this. Like that. That's called an adult. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, the attitude is important. The proper attitude is there. That's why it says, Prani Patena, Prani Prashnena, right? You have you want to know, and you have the right cultured attitude. And it's something you're going to apply it. Right? Like we've seen sometimes queries will be made, and you ask, why are you asking this? And they'll say, oh, it's just interesting. So they're not going to apply it, so that's the wrong question. Because the three go together. You want to know, you deal properly, and you're going to try to apply it. When those three are there, that now is the proper question and answer. So when we see, like when Prabhupada had that discussion with, what was his name?
Bob Cohen.
Yeah, Bob Cohen. Brahmatirtha Prabhu. Then it was called Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers, because he wanted to know, he was asking submissively, and he's going to apply it in his life. He's asking so again. So Maharaj Yadu is applying it, asking so he can apply it in his life. That's why he's doing it. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura writes, by his service, he brought the Brahmana under control. His intelligence attracted the Brahmana. For these reasons, the Brahmana replied. Right? So that service attitude, that's the whole point. So when we say, what's the attitude? It's the attitude of service. Because you're going to apply. Someone intelligent, they'll explain if you're going to use what they're talking about. You're going to appreciate it. But if you're not, then Manu says, better the Brahman dies with his knowledge than explains it to someone who's unqualified. So there's no such thing as I have the right to know. It doesn't exist. You can qualify to know, but you can't say just because you feel like it, you have the right to know. Like that. Of course, this may wipe out a large amount of the, how you say, modern social contexts that people interact on. But the point is that the Vedic system was how to elevate yourself, not how to have a good ride on a very wide, you know, whatever it is, 8-lane, nicely surfaced, you know, tarmac to hell. Like that. you're trying to go elevate yourself. But
it's looking for quality in life.
Yes. Yeah, it's qualities. Not qualities of the highway. Qualities of that to elevate yourself. Yeah. The Brahmana said, "My dear king, with my intelligence I have taken shelter of many spiritual masters, having gained transcendental understanding from them. I now wander about the earth in a liberated condition. Please listen as I describe them to you." Okay. So he's gained a transcendental understanding, but we can see from this previous point from the Kena Upanishad, the eye does not go there, nor does speech go there, nor the mind. We know it not. Right? We do not know how anyone can teach us about it. It is different from the known and even more different from the unknown. Right? So it's only because we've heard from teachers in the ancient tradition. So he's heard in Parampara. Taking that knowledge, now he's applying it. And from this, then he's going to explain he has so many gurus. Like that. Otherwise, just learning from these particular individuals, you won't get an understanding. You can get some understanding. You could bring yourself possibly to a more elevated position. But being liberated, is that what Maharaj Yayati would be interested in? No. Because then you might see that they're detached, but you would also see this element of dryness, and you would also see this element of darkness. So even though there's a liberated aspect, it still will carry that point of, it still has the, avidya aspect to it, because it's liberation within avidya. The avidya potency that's there before the material world, you know, our involvement, that will still remain. So it won't be the clarity that's there in a devotee who's liberated. And if they're not a devotee, why would they be in Bhagavatam? Right? So that's the whole point, especially 11th canto. We're concluding the whole thing, and here's Uddhava, Krishna's dearmost associate. So he's not going to talk to him about some impersonalist. Right? You know, even the story of Sukadeva Goswami, the four Kumaras, is their stint as impersonalist. Very little is given in the Bhagavatam. If you want to know more, you have to get from other literatures. They'll explain, you know, this aspect or that aspect and that. But the Bhagavatam just explains that he ran off and then, you know, having heard these nice instructions, and that's it. So, yeah. O king, I have taken shelter of 24 gurus who are the following: the earth, air, sky, water, fire, moon, sun, pigeon, and python. The sea, moth, honeybee, elephant. I was going to say eggplant, but no, it's an elephant, right? An elephant. If you were Bengali, then you could learn from the eggplant. But otherwise, yeah. Elephant, honey, and honey thief. The deer, the fish, the prostitute pingala, the kurara bird, and the child, and the young girl, arrow maker, serpent, spider, and wasp. My dear king, by studying their activities, I have learned the science of the self. Please listen, O son of Maharaj Yayati. O tiger among men, as I explain to you what I have learned from each of these gurus, right? So he even knows who he is and everything like this. But it's just that you don't have to deal. You just move through the, because Krishna is taking care. So if someone comes and asks, then you may interact and deal, like Sukadeva Goswami. He's just wandering about. And when he comes into the assembly, he has all the local village kids there, you know, how you say, being around and saying stupid stuff and like this and that, because how many times do you have some naked guy walk through your village? Right? And so they have to harass. At the same time, he's followed by all these girls, because how often do you have a naked guy walk through your village that's young and beautiful looking, right? So then everybody's there. It's all happening. And he's couldn't care less. Then when he comes to the sages, then he comes out of that avidhut mood and then takes on that mood of the madhyama and then speaks. So then this avidhut also being pleased, then he's taking that position.
And he was requested to speak.
Yes, and he was requested.
Not speak by himself.
Yeah, no, yes. They ask him to speak. Yeah, that's all a very important point. Yeah. Yeah, because otherwise he'd just go on doing his avidhut stuff and the king would do his stuff. Or the sages would do, and he'd come by and see, and okay, yeah, maybe wave, and then keep going, right? The Brahmana continued, "A sober person, even when harassed by other living beings, should understand that his aggressors are acting helplessly under the control of God, and thus you should never be distracted from progress on his own path. So he's opening with this statement. Mm-hmm. Very, very important. Because we take up the path of devotional service. Then, if anything is happening, his sober person, even when harassed by other living entities, beings, right? So, then they're going to be creating trouble for us. Because of our attachments and identity with these situations and all that, then we'll feel disturbed. And because we're disturbed, then we can't chant, we can't read, we can't do this, we can't do that. And we feel that we're, you know, justified in not doing these things. And if you want to continue in the slow down your devotional service or stay in the material world, it is the bona fide way to do it. But he's pointing out, as a transcendentalist, that you can't become disturbed by that, because it's those people who are harassing you are functioning under the modes of nature. And the modes of nature are ultimately under the control of Krishna. Right? And so, why would they be bothering you unless there's something that you're supposed to learn from that? Right? If you're a materialist, which we're not talking about here, then that's just what's going to happen anyway. You'll identify with it and get bent out of shape, and then don't worry. In the future, you'll be able to harass them. The modes of nature will arrange. And then you both can stay here for life after life harassing each other. Right? But if you're interested in getting out of the material world, you have to understand is that this harassment is there because there's something to learn from it. There's something in the consciousness, some attachment, something that's there that we're holding on to, that this harassment is there to either reveal or remove, like this. Because otherwise, if we become distressed from this, he shouldn't be distracted, because that's the first thing that happens. Right? Means we're not necessarily doing anything so-called, we'd say materialistically progressive when we get harassed. But then we're also not doing anything spiritual. Right? And there's a good chance that when it's just too much, then we'll take shelter of something material that we find comforting. You know, some food, some music, some this, some that, some association. That is material, and we're dealing on that platform. So he's saying is, don't become distracted, because you should be taking shelter of the spiritual. Understand, that's just how the material world works anyway. Right? And there's plenty of examples. Yudhishthira is not disturbed. Right? The Pandavas are not. Paladmars is not. Dhruva Maharaj is, he starts off that way, but it gets him where he's interested in devotional life, and then he becomes fixed in it. And then he gets the results when he's fixed. But he took up the process because he wanted to solve that, you know. So then he came in the category, well, both. Artha, he was disturbed, and then Artarti, he wanted a kingdom bigger than Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma is, you know, controlling the whole universe. So something bigger than the universe. Right? You know, like that.
Somebody can ask how much we should go into depth analyzing why this specific thing happens to us.
Only in as much as it's useful in going forward and not being distracted in Krishna consciousness. Because it's not, what are we analyzing? We should be analyzing, okay, what is this, what field is it happening in? So therefore, what is the point? What is bothering you about that? Why this person is harassing? But how are they harassing? They're being insensitive, they're trying to control you, they're making trouble for you, you know, whatever it is. But why that's there, unless that's something that you've done, because you won't get a reaction to something you haven't done. Like that? So it's just there. So it's a matter of then, and in this, what's the main point? Take shelter of Krishna. That's the main point. And then what's to learn from that? Then we're trying to control. We're trying to, that's why it bothers us. We're not trying to control. Does it bother us? Right? You know, if the king comes in and then tells, you know, one of the courtiers to, you know, do this, is he bothered? You know, it's not like, well, this is a king, always telling me what to do, you know, it's like that. But another kshatriya, he tells another king, you know, I want this, and then you may say, what's his business telling me, you know? You understand? So it's only going to resonate because there's a quality we have. So that much, and then try to see there. But point is if you can't if you can understand it, great. And if you can't, then Prabhupada says, you know, it all ultimately goes back to Krishna, as he's saying here, the avatut. So therefore, just surrender to Krishna. And by surrendering to Krishna, then you give up that controlling, enjoying mood. That's the source of any problem anyway. And so by that surrender, even if you don't know mechanically how you got there, it will solve the problem. So the more you stay in that surrender state, the more you stay in that state to not be attached to or interested in sense gratification or liberation, to that, then any time that comes up in the mind, you just go out of that. Don't let it, you know, become a topic of contemplation.
Yes.
You know, because then it won't go, because it has to start with thinking. And if you think enough, then there's feelings. And then from feelings, then there's that commitment to do. And then only after that, then you do something. So if at the point of thinking you stop it, then nothing will ever happen. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so he's opening with that. So that's a very important part, because otherwise, even you're following the process, you can get distracted, because material nature, she has unlimited ways to distract. Because that's what she does. So we have to just not be distracted.
But Maharaj, it is a dira situation. So a person is like transcendental to the Guna.
Yeah, but we have to start. Yeah, you have to start somewhere. So at least there has to be one moment of being sober,
yes.
You know, like that. And then one moment will lead to two moments, will lead to, you know, how you say two go together, yes. And then the two goes together into six, like that. So yes. Another Vedanta Sutra joke. Yeah? So then it'll just grow until it becomes the big.
Yes, yes.
Right? Then you have the big sober instead of the small sober, right? Yeah. This rule I have learned from the earth, right? So this is his first teaching. Because if that's there, then you'll be able to apply any other teachings, because you won't get distracted. Right? So that's why it's the first teaching. Where does he learn this? From the earth itself. A saintly person should learn from the mountain to devote all his efforts. So that was the earth, air, sky, fire, sea, moth. So then the mountain is part of the earth thing. Okay. This rule I've learned from the earth. A saintly person should learn from the mountain to devote all his efforts to the service of others and to make the welfare of others the sole reason for their existence. Right? Because the mountain provides all the herbs, all everything that you need is there in the mountains. It provides the caves, whatever it is that people need in raw material, the mountains are providing. So that's the whole point. They're dedicating themselves always to the service of others. Right? To please Krishna. Right? Similarly, as the disciple of the tree, okay, he should learn to dedicate himself to others, right? Because you're working for the welfare of others. You've gained that. That's the reason. And then he should dedicate himself to others as the tree, because they have all the fruits and flowers and means all edibles, all the medicines, the shade, all that's coming from the tree. The tree's not asking anything in return, right? It's not that when you sit down under the tree or you pick a fruit, then out of the trunk this little you know note comes out and says, okay, that'll be $5.95. And then you think, what? What do I care for the tree? And then you turn around and there's this little gnome guy there with this big stick hitting it, and all that. So okay, I'm paying.
Maharaj?
Yes.
So only if one is sober, then other things can follow.
Basically, you can say that's there, but all these things can be cultivated. But the point is if you want to be not distracted from Krishna consciousness, mm-hmm. then you have to, like the earth, not be disturbed by whatever harassment is there. Mm-hmm. Why the earth, right? Every day, people are digging holes in the ground, doing this, that, throwing garbage everywhere. It's just a constant harassment.
Mm-hmm.
But she's tolerant. That's why it says tolerant like the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, what did the earth do to deserve that you decide to build a house on top of her? Right? You know, but we do. Like that. And it's only because she's tolerant. If every time you start digging a hole, then, the earthquake happened, then probably people would stop. And after a while, it's just, don't dig, you know. So you see the little kid starts to pick up a stick, everyone would, no, like this, you know. So then it would, you know, you'd learn after a while. It's just don't touch the earth, right?
Might like Mother Earth Bhumi was disturbed because too many demoniac people were taking the earth in a bad way.
Yeah, because the what do you call it? The pride. Because that's what you always see when it mentions about the lessening the burden of the earth is because he removed these armies and that with pride, yes. That had pride. The ones that don't have pride is not a problem.
Yes.
It's the ones with pride. So she can't, it's said that she can tolerate, you know, the largest mountain, but she can't tolerate, you know, somebody who's proud.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I even think some places it even says ungrateful.
Liars.
You know, just this kind of, just bad quality. She can't tolerate that. And they're just walking on top, you know, how much that? But the mountain, that's quite heavy. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. He speaks of the mountain and the tree, which also represent the earth. Right, so it's the earth and then these other representatives of the earth. So it's all in this. The mountain always devotes its efforts to others by holding up the earth, producing waterfalls, and giving jewels. The devotee should learn this conduct from the mountain. As the disciple of the tree, he should learn to dedicate himself completely to others. One can take the tree from one place to another, plant it and water it. The tree accepts this and does not protest. Can you imagine you digging up the tree and it's sitting there yelling and screaming the whole time? And just, you know, no. When you put it in, it's like, why are you putting me here? Like, this? You know, what kind of gardener are you? You know, you call yourself a gardener? Yeah, yes. Good. So it's a good thing that they put up with it. The yogi should be like that. This is the particular nature of the tree not seen in the mountain, right? It doesn't protest. The mountain, then, it's doing all these things, providing all these things, doing so much support and everything like that. But we don't see that it's complaining when it's just moved from here to there, that, but that's the way the tree is. So because they both come from the earth, then we see the earth has all these qualities. Right? You dig up some dirt here, take it there, she's not complaining. It's nothing. You know, you pour the dirt, you know, you load up your truck and then you drive down. When you get to the place, you go to open the truck and it's not there. The dirt's back at there. Or you pour the pile here. You come back the next day, it's back where it was. No, it doesn't happen. No.
So Maharaj, can we say that one of the main teaching is to give to other people? Like the earth, the trees, the mountain are only giving. They are not taking.
Giving, tolerating. Like that, because giving is one thing. Like you see, is that there's many, you know, cultured, very wealthy people. They'll give charity,
yes,
but they won't tolerate dealing badly,
yes,
at all.
Yes.
Like that. So here it's showing that you need, yes, both. You have to be able to give and support and tolerate.
Yes. Yes.
Like that. Because otherwise we give and support and then, you know, then it's about like that. I've given you so much. And as soon as that comes up, then where's the relationship? Okay, then it's a business thing?
Yes.
As soon as you say, you're thinking, no, this is Praman, why you should act nicely. I'm acting nicely. I'm providing all this facility. Why aren't you acting nicely? But then by doing that, then there's no relationship. It's a matter, because I gave you this, then you do like this. So it's not that you're doing that out of a relationship. Because if it was a relationship, you wouldn't bring it up. You understand? Yeah, so the all this goes together. It's just various aspects. So the earth is tolerant, then we see from the mountain and from the tree to aspects coming from the earth, then the variety of this. Like that. Does that make sense? That's why it says, Amanina Mana Dana.
Yes.
I'm respecting others, but I'm not expecting respect for myself. Because you'll see, there are the people that are respectful to everybody, but you have to be respectful to them also.
Yes.
You know, so they demand it because I'm respectful to everybody. They better be respectful with me. And so it's true that they're giving respect. That's cultured, like that. You know, or you find the person who, like let's say Diogenes. Like so, then he's not offering respect to anybody, but he doesn't expect any respect either.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, so, you know, it's also good. I mean, so the one they'll consider a cultured person like that, but you have to deal properly. And the other one you'll see, okay, they're a detached person, but, you know, they're not going to deal with you nicely either. But, they're, you know, you can deal with them however you like. But And then you, of course, have the cliche of the person who expects everybody to respect him but doesn't respect anybody, you know, like that. And they're always, that's always considered very, no one appreciates that. But here we're talking about the person, he respects everybody but doesn't expect for himself. So he's giving to everybody but's not expecting for himself. So again, you see the tree, you know, tolerant like the tree, like that, because that's the point that's there. Is that? Yeah. The Brahmana continued, a learned sage should take his satisfaction with the actions of his prana and should not seek satisfaction through the sense objects. In other words, one should care for the material body in such a way that one's higher knowledge is not destroyed and so that one's speech and mind are not deviated from self-realization. Right? So your satisfaction of the prana, right? Not the senses and sense objects. Does that make sense? Because it's from the prana that the senses are functioning. But it's only as much as maintains the body so that you can do devotional service. So anything more than that, if it'll distract you, you shouldn't get involved. So it depends on the individual. Yudhishthira Maharaj is running an empire, doing the Rajasuya sacrifice, you know, being glorified by everyone in the universe. But it doesn't distract him. So for him, it's just, he's just maintaining. But Duryodhana, now he's the one that wants to, you know, fully satisfy the sense objects. Right? Yudhishthira is seeing all that in connection with the Lord. Duryodhana is seeing all that in connection with himself. That's the difference.
We have seen in Vedanta Sutra something. Prana, Krishna is prana.
Yes, Krishna is prana.
So yeah.
But Krishna is all these: the tolerance, the you know, the charitableness, the giving support. All that's Krishna. So all qualities are Krishna. So that's the thing: is from this, from seeing this, is you're going back to the essential quality. In other words, you're seeing external. That is based on a quality. That quality is what you can apply in your life. Because otherwise you can't, you know, grow leaves like a tree or, you know, have a, you know, very wide bottom like a mountain and a pointy top, or, you know, like that. You know, maybe we can get wide in the middle and then suddenly pointy at both ends, but that's not exactly a mountain. Unless you say it's two mountains put together like that, you know. You know what I'm saying? So we can't do that, but you can take the quality of there. What's the principle of what makes the tree a tree, and what's that? That's the specialness. So that's there. But those qualities come from Krishna. That's why they're always engaged in his service. Right? So that's why qualities seen on their own without Krishna then are useless. Even though they may seem glorious on the material platform. You know, being honest and truthful and nice. On the material platform, it seems, but that's because it gives the best economic advantage. The best, you know, advantage in, you know, emotional profit, physical profit, you know, economic profit. It gives all in all these areas. But why? Because it's Krishna. Krishna is the one that causes things. He's time. He makes the things happen. He makes, gives the results. So the devotee takes it back to there. Therefore, they can move through the world, see the world. It's not that the avidhu doesn't notice anything. You know, it's like materialistic people try to be an avidhu. They play like they're dumb in that, and they just act dumb. But we see here is he's not. You can tell he's cultured. You can tell he's enlightened. Because they can see everything, but they only see it in connection to Krishna. And they're only contemplating connection to Krishna. And since they don't have anything to do in this world, they don't do anything physically other than how much is needed to maintain themselves so they can continue being absorbed in Krishna. Like that. So, for an avidhu, he doesn't have to maintain anything other than just the basic that the body functions. But you see, like Yudhishthira, he has to maintain an empire to perform, offer his duty as a kshatriya in Krishna's service. But you see, as soon as they move from grihastha to vanaprastha, they leave everything. Right? And just go to the forest. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's the... So the idea is that this knowledge, what he's giving, because he's not expecting now that he'll become an avidhut. Mm-hmm. Right? He's expecting he'll become self-realized. And by that, then he'll be able to see. So these 24 gurus are the ones that keep him busy and absorbed. Others may see this, bring other aspects, and all that kind of stuff. Does that make sense? Okay, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. There are two types of air, prana and the external air. This verse speaks of what he learned from prana. Prana operates by eating and other actions, and is not dependent on the objects of the senses like form and taste, indriyat-priyat. Right? It can act without them.
Yes.
Right? By taking satisfaction from the prana, he becomes a sage. Jnana will be destroyed by disturbance of the mind, caused by disruption of the prana. Therefore, you know, that's why the mind feels all wild and crazy, because the prana gets disturbed. Right? Therefore, one should maintain the body by eating, etc., but in such a way that speech and mind will not create disturbance. Right? So you only eat how much is necessary, like that. Does that make sense? You know, and whatever is necessary, that's what you eat. Bhima, then we see how much he would eat that was necessary. So even when they were in Ekachakra, and they went out begging, you know, the five of them, so they bring it back, and then they put it all together. So there's six. This time there's only six of them.
Yes.
Right? So six of them. So whatever was there then was divided up. Half of that went to Bhima.
Yes.
And the other half then they divided by the other five.
Yes.
Right? Like that. So
equality.
Yes, yes, equal. So they all got 10%, he got 50%.
Yes.
Like that. And still he was hungry. So that's why when it came the opportunity to go and take care of Baka, you know, that was it? Was Baka? Yeah, the Rakshasa Baka.
Yeah.
Then, you know, the main... one is he likes a good fight, so that's going to be fun, because they're just being doing all this Brahmin stuff, and so then you can have some, you know, some fight. But even along with that, added on, is that they take a huge amount of food out to him. Right? Because, you know, it's like, you know, a huge amount of food and then a human on the side, right? You know, does that make sense? You know, you get the main meat and a side of something. Because otherwise it would be so many people, so then they reduce it down, send a huge amount of food in one person.
Yeah.
And so then he eats all the food. I mean, all of it, right? This Rakshasa, that would be who knows how long, because the Rakshasa, he has his family also there. So I'm sure you don't think that necessarily he would eat it himself, but he'd take it in and feed the family. Yeah. Bhima eats it all himself, right? And the demon is coming and getting angry and beating him. And he doesn't care. He just kind of turns around and keeps eating, you know? And then when he finished, then he not only finished and then starts fighting, no, he finishes, gets up, washes hands, mouth, and feet, and now, okay, now we're going to fight. Yeah. So in other words, just maintaining, you know, what's necessary. So it's not a volume. Sometimes we take it as a volume, like that.
This is why we say to maintain body and soul together.
Yes, so body and soul stay. Yes, body and soul stay together. Because if you don't eat, you know, it's too less. Also, it's just what it is that you eat. You know, it's just like I told that story where I took a bunch of Bengali boys from here to Bombay. You know, and the train is famous for not being very short, you know. I think the shortest train's 33 hours. Well, that's what it was back then. But, you know, most of the time you ended up with the 36 or more, depending on who get the ticket. So we went, and I took a huge basket of food like that, you know. I mean, and nice stuff, you know, samosas and sweets and, you know, all these nice stuff like that. And we got there, you know, so it took us a few days to get there. And then when we got there, the in charge then asked them, you know, so how was it? How was the journey and all that? And yeah, okay, well, you know, how you eat and all that. No, we didn't eat for 2 days, for 3 days. We didn't eat for 3 days. And like they turned to me and what's this? I told you to feed and take care of them, you know, take care of them nice. You're not feeding. He says, no, but I gave you this. It's kind of like then he turns back to the boys. He says, but he gave you all that. What do you mean you didn't eat? And he said, no rice. Yeah, so. Yeah, so it has to also be food that you can relate to. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Fancy for money for it.
Huh?
Fancy for
money. Yeah, yeah, like that. And
rice would have been cheap.
Yeah, yeah, just a big basket of rice, it would have been great. Or just take some cheer and they probably would have been happy, right? You know? That would have been good. Like that. A few chilies, a few tomatoes, some blanca, some muri. Yeah, now I know. Yeah. Yeah, I remember we had also some South Indians were here for a while, and they were, the rice is there, so that's good. But after a while, they're freaking out because there's no yogurt. Like that. They needed yogurt with their rice. Even if there was only yogurt and rice, leave the subjis, leave everything else. As long as there's yogurt, then they're good, you know. So, like that. So, and others, then it's cheese, you know, whatever it is, whatever it works. Yes. Okay. The mind will become disturbed by eating coarse or impure food. The mind and speech will be agitated by food which is too oily because of increase in laziness. Because of increase in laziness and semen. Okay, so if there's too much oil, it'll create laziness, like that, and it will increase the semen. The semen will agitate the mind, like that. So it can't be too oily. That's why after you fry the stuff, you put it on those paper towels so it'll soak up all the extra oil, then it's not too oily. Right? Very important. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanand.
Hare Krishna, just for your attention, on Thursday, Govardhan Puja, there will be no classes here. Okay? Today evening, today afternoon we have, and on Friday we also have as usual.
It's also the possibility from Monday we would only have the morning.
It's not final yet.
Yeah, it's not final. We haven't finalized.